Yeah, I would meet with her after she taught my classes. She'd fill me in on what had happened, things like that. We also went out for coffee a few times. I think I was the only sort of friend she had. I mean, she never talked about anyone else in her life.
What did you two talk about?
Well, I did most of the talking, come to think of it. Anne was quiet. I can't even tell you if she had family living. I mean, she never talked about stuff like that.
She must have said something.
The kids, the lessons, the state of education in America. What did she think of that?
Asked Jameson. Billings frowned.
She wasn't a big fan, to tell the truth. She thought the kids had it too easy, had too much stuff. Did you know she lived in a million-dollar condo and drove a Mercedes-Benz 600?
Billings' astonished expression answered for her.
What? I had no idea. I thought she was as poor as me. I mean, she never said. What else? My kids would tell me that she was very strict and wouldn't tolerate any horseplay. I mean, that's not a bad thing in a high school. The kids can get out of hand pretty quickly if you let them take advantage, but Anne seemed to have a way about her that commanded respect. What would she teach? Math. She had a really good grasp of it. I teach algebra and calculus, too, and I think I'm pretty good. That was my degree in college, but I have to admit that Anne was far superior to me in the field. The kids would tell me that she could easily work out problems on the board that she'd never even seen before. And she was never stumped for an answer for any question they might have. In fact, Anne had helped me on some lesson plans and shown me a few shortcuts with some of the formulas. I just assumed that she was a math major, too.
Jameson said,
"We're not sure. Her resume said computers, but that may not be true." "What do you mean, may not be true?"
asked Billings. Decker said, "She may not be who she said she was. In fact, it's pretty clear she wasn't."
"I don't understand. Then who was she?"
"That's the $64,000 question," said Decker. "Did she ever speak a foreign language in front of you?" Billings looked alarmed.
"A foreign language? Like what language?"
"Let's leave it at anything other than English."
"No. Although sometimes it seemed that I could detect a little bit of an accent that I couldn't place. My boyfriend was raised in Germany, and he has an accent. That's probably why I picked up on it. Are you saying Anne wasn't American?" "We're not sure,"
said Jameson. "Anything you can remember that seemed out of the ordinary?" asked Decker. Billings looked confused.
"Compared to what? Just anything she said that seemed out of character?"
Billings drank her coffee and thought about it.
"Well, I'm sure it's not important."
"It could be."
"We were sitting in my class one morning. She had come in early to fill me in on a test she had done while I was out. The kids weren't in yet."
"Okay."
"She'd finished but had gotten up to leave. As a rule, when Anne was done, she was done. She'd just get up and leave. I mean, without saying anything. Not just with me, but with other teachers, too. I don't think she meant to be rude. That was just a quirk she had." "Really?"
said Jameson, staring dead at Decker.
"Wow, who would have thought?"
Decker ignored her look and said, "But this time, she didn't leave?"
"No, she was sitting there just staring off into space. I asked her if anything was the matter. She said no. Then I started telling her about my old boyfriend. I don't know why, but I'd gotten an email from him after not hearing a word from the idiot for 2 years. I was complaining about him to Anne, but really just talking to myself. I remember saying that I really thought he was the one, you know, the guy I'd walked down the aisle with, right?"
Decker didn't react to this, but Jameson said,
"Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. So then I said that after 4 years together, I thought I really knew Phil, but turns out I didn't know him at all."
After Billings stopped talking, Decker said, "And then what?"
"Oh, and that's when she said it."
"Said what?" Billings looked at each of them before answering.
"She said that the exact same thing had happened to her."
Decker said,
"That she thought she knew someone, but turns out she didn't?"
"Yes, and that's when she got up and left, without a word, like usual."
When was this? Asked Decker sharply.
2 weeks ago today. I remember because the test was the final one for the quarter.
Billings looked at Decker.
Is that important?
She asked. When Decker didn't answer, Jameson said,
Yes, it's very important.
Decker got up and walked out without a word. Billings looked at Jameson and said,
I guess you have one of those on your hands, too.
Jameson smiled, stood, and said,
Good with the bad. If we need anything else, we'll be in touch. Thanks.
Chapter 40. She had one like this. Decker and Jameson were driving to meet Melvin Mars for dinner. Decker was holding the doll they'd found at Berkshire's storage unit.
Who? Your daughter?
Asked Jameson, glancing over. Decker nodded and then put the doll down next to him.
You don't really talk about your family much,
said Jameson cautiously. What am I supposed to say? Replied Decker, not looking at her.
It takes time, Decker. We all process differently, and you process in a way that is totally unique.
Time doesn't heal my wounds, Alex. For me, there is no such thing as time, at least when it comes to memories.
Don't you have a way of, I don't know, walling things off?
If I did, I think I would have tried. They drove in silence for a few moments. What are the odds that two different people, Dabney and Berkshire, would use pretty much the exact same phrase? Asked Decker.
Who could they be referring to? The same person? Different people? Each other, maybe?
Decker shook his head. I don't know. If each other, then they must have known each other.
So apparently she was good at math and had a slight accent. Does that tell us anything?
Yeah, that she was good at math and had a slight accent. Jameson sighed and changed the subject.
So, how was it working with Harper Brown?
Decker shrugged. She keeps things close to the vest, but I think she wants to solve this case as much as we do. Maybe more, since now it's turned into a spy case involving her agency. He paused. Her father worked at DIA. He's on their torchbearer's wall for extraordinary service.
Huh, maybe that explains things.
Explains what?
Why she's so damn driven.
She's wealthy, too. Lives in a big house near Capitol Hill. Her great-grandfather was some fat cat investor way back. Invested in blue chips long before they were blue chips.
Wow, just what I wanted to hear.
He glanced at her. You okay?
Sure. Why wouldn't I be? She's a knockout, has this cool career, and she's loaded. Yay! Good for her.
Decker rubbed at his knees, which were crammed against the dashboard. I have to admit, her BMW has a lot more room than your car.
Do you want to walk the rest of the way?
Jameson said between gritted teeth. When they entered the restaurant, they saw that Mars was already seated in the back. He rose and waved to them. They joined him and sat down. I've met all the people in the building, said Mars. Good folks.
When did you do that?
Asked Jameson. Yesterday and today. I think you picked a great location, Alex. Thanks. Mars looked over at Decker, who had said nothing. You okay, man? Asked Mars. When Decker didn't answer, Jameson said,
Case is not going all that well.
Mars nodded and said, Can't have it good all the time, but you guys will get there. We don't always get there, Melvin, said Decker quietly. The bad guys win, too, sometimes. I got faith in you, Decker. You don't let the bad guys win. Decker pulled the doll out of his backpack and placed it on the table. What is that? Asked Mars, looking puzzled.
A clue,
answered Jameson. You're kidding.
It was used to steal secrets,
said Jameson.
It's got a hidden compartment.
She picked up the doll and showed him. A doll, baby. Damn, said Mars. That's going pretty low. The waitress came and they ordered. She glanced at the doll but said nothing. When the woman walked away, Jameson said,
So, how would the exchanges take place, do you think?
I'm not sure, admitted Decker. The doll would need to get from A to B and then back to A. It seems sort of James Bond stuff, said Mars. I mean, don't they just, you know, hack stuff now and steal it electronically?
Well, this was back when they didn't do it like that,
said Jameson.
They used floppy disks and dolls and, I don't know, microdots and rolls of film that would fit inside the doll.
Decker took the doll from Jameson. While they ate, he said nothing. He just kept staring at the doll. Later that night, after Jameson went to bed, Decker sat at the kitchen table holding the doll. After a few minutes, he rose, put on his coat and a ball cap, and headed out. It was drizzling. His walk carried him along the river. He had taken his gun with him because it was just that sort of a neighborhood, especially at night. He reached the same bench he had when he'd been jogging and sat down. He liked the night often better than the day. Light tended to intrude on him, even when it wasn't bombarding him with harsh blues in the face of death. And he could think, and use his memory to try to catch some anomaly, some inconsistency that would point him in the right direction. He closed his eyes, took a deep breath, and listened to the rain falling. But his thoughts were actually not on the case. He was not thinking about Walter Dabney, or Ann Berkshire, or anything along those lines. Molly and Cassie. Daughter and wife. Dead nearly 2 years now. And as time passed, it would be 10 years, then 20, then 30, then... He could imagine the passage of time. He could imagine the lessening of grief, of loss. But he could not imagine that lessening happening to him. All he had to do was reach back into his perfect memory, and there it would all be. The discovery of the bodies, in their full hellish glory, with not a single impression or observation subtracted from the equation or diminished by the passage of time. He opened his eyes, and there she was. I don't like being followed, he said crossly. Harper Brown sat down next to him.
I'm not too keen on having to follow you.
So why do it?
Protecting assets, Decker, and DIA considers you a prime one.
I work for the FBI.
For now you do, but there's always tomorrow.
Before he could respond, she said,
What were you thinking about just now?
Nothing. She laughed lightly.
As if.
Why are you here?
I already said.
They could have sent a flunky to follow me. I see this as a waste of your time. You have bigger fish to fry. She took something out of her coat pocket. It was a piece of laminated paper.
I finished reading the Russian communication.
And?
And I might have found something.
She handed him the laminated paper.
This is a translation.
Decker read through it. It says someone named Aha Sarizamak was presented with an award for services rendered.
Espionage services,
added Brown. So who is this Aha Sarizamak?
I think the answer lies in how the name translates to English.
How?
Aha is Anna. She'd be called Anna in Russia, too. Remember Anna Karenina? But the different alphabet, you know. I didn't translate the name fully because I wanted to keep you in suspense.
He glared at her. I'm in enough suspense as it is.
Touché.
And Sarizamak?
It means Greylock.
Okay, Anna I get, but how does Greylock help?
Greylock is a mountain in Massachusetts.
Still not getting the connection.
It's the highest mountain in the Berkshires.
Decker stared down at the paper. Ann Berkshire. Chapter 41. Bogart said, We confirmed that the resume Berkshire submitted to the school was concocted. The database at Virginia Tech was compromised, and her background was placed there. Her degrees and such. Very professionally done.
And the fingerprints used to do the background check?
Asked Jameson. She and Decker sat next to Milligan at the WFO. Someone apparently created a database profile for Berkshire, complete with prints showing no criminal background. And her references looked legit, but were also faked. All that's not easy to do, said Milligan. It might be if you have a foreign government behind you, said Bogart. Milligan said, Okay, based on what Brown found in that Russian communication, it seems that Berkshire was a Russian spy going way back. She came to this country perhaps in the 80s and started acting as a handler for some mole, maybe at DIA. Then she surfaced decades later, finally ending up in Reston with a multi-million dollar condo and luxury car, and being a substitute teacher and a hospice volunteer in her spare time.
And dying at the hands of Walter Dabney, who also recently stole secrets to pay off his son-in-law's gambling debts.
Finished Jameson. Bogart said, "But do we really know that it was just recently?" "What do you mean?" asked Milligan. "What if Dabney was the mole way back when? Don't forget he worked at the NSA before starting his own company. The stuff that was found in that storage unit didn't say that Berkshire was a handler for a spy at DIA. Despite the DIA visitor's badge, the spy could have been at NSA. The timeline works because Dabney was there in the 1980s. "But we couldn't establish any connection between Dabney and Berkshire," pointed out Milligan.
"Well, if they were spies, they would go to great pains to make sure there were no connections, or at least no obvious ones. And we've learned from Nancy Billings that Berkshire used the same phrase as Dabney did, 'You think you know someone.' That either shows a connection, or it's a hell of a coincidence."
"And remember,"
said Jameson,
"back then, I doubt Anne Berkshire was using that name. She and Dabney could have had a connection, but while she was using a different name. Her current name might have been suggested to her by what we saw in that document. Anna Sarizamok became Anne Berkshire."
Bogart sat back. "So how do we trace a connection between them from the 1980s, if we have no idea what her name was back then?"
"We would just have to do it from visual evidence. Show her picture to the folks from back then and see if they recognize her."
"People change a lot over the years," noted Milligan. "I doubt we'll be able to find anyone who recognizes her, and we don't have a single picture of her from then."
Bogart said, "We can have our technical people reverse the aging process and show what she might have looked like as a younger person."
He paused and looked at Decker.
"Amos, you've been unusually quiet. Do you have any thoughts on the matter?"
"Why would she stop spying?"
"What?" said Bogart.
Decker held up the translated KGB communication. "She kept this. She was obviously proud of it. Along with the floppy disk and the doll, tools of her spy craft. She was clearly proud of what she did, so why give it up? We've assumed that she had a change of heart when she started teaching and volunteering, so why keep the stuff that is clearly associated with her past life in espionage?"
Jameson said,
"Are you suggesting that she might still have been a spy, right up until she was killed?"
"I'm saying it's possible, because we haven't definitively ruled it out, and we haven't ruled out that Dabney hasn't been spying all these years either."
"Do you have any evidence that he has been?" asked Bogart.
Before Decker could answer, Jameson said,
"How about the fact that he was able, in a short period of time, to sell secrets for $10 million to enemies of this country in order to pay off his son-in-law's gambling debts? Now, if he was honest and above board, where did he find a buyer for that much money so quickly? One answer is he could have easily, if he'd been spying all along and had knowledge of people willing to pay for secrets."
Milligan and Bogart exchanged a glance. "Damn," said Milligan. "I never thought about it that way." Decker gazed at Jameson. "That was a good insight, Alex." She smiled and said modestly,
"I have one, occasionally."
"The devil is in the details, the small details," added Bogart. "So do we go back to his days at the NSA and see what we can find out, and then move forward up until the present?"
"I'm not sure I see another path," said Decker. "We'll need to get some more agents on this," said Milligan, "because that's a lot of legwork and document review. And the NSA is not known for their cooperation. And on top of that, they're definitely not going to be pleased that we're alleging they might have had a spy in their ranks 30-some years ago." Jameson said,
"How does this reconcile with what Agent Brown told us? She said Walter Dabney stole secrets from DIA and sold them to an enemy of this country. If he were spying all this time, from NSA up until today, are you saying that he was working with Anne Berkshire the whole time? And that the gambling debt spying was just a one-off? They paid him money to save his kid as a favor for years of service? And if they did so, why kill Berkshire?"
Like we said before, to silence her if she was indeed his handler, said Milligan. He was trying to tie up loose ends before he killed himself. Berkshire may not have known that he was terminal with cancer. Decker stirred.
But if they were working together, why pick a rendezvous spot on a public street next to the Hoover Building? Why make the murder public? He could have killed Berkshire in private. They could have met at some place like her farm cottage. If they were spy and handler, they probably met there regularly anyway. But by murdering her in public, he ruined his reputation and brought horrendous attention to his family, who he seemed to genuinely care for. It just doesn't make sense.
None of it makes sense, added Milligan wearily.
No, it makes perfect sense to someone, said Decker. We just have to reach that same level of awareness.
Well, whatever we do, this is not going to be a quick fix, said Bogart. It might take years to unravel.
It might, said Decker. Or it might not.
Bogart said,
I can get the ball rolling on the NSA piece. What are you going to do, Amos?
We have yet to figure out Walter Dabney. I'm going to revisit that.
How? Asked Bogart.
There's only one way to do it. Talk to his family again.
But we've already done that, protested Milligan.
Not with the mindset that he was a long-term spy.
You're not going to come out and accuse the man of being a spy to his family, are you? Said Bogart, looking alarmed. That's not a great recipe to get them to cooperate.
Decker rose.
I think I know how to phrase it.
Chapter 42. The housekeeper they had seen on a previous visit answered the door. She was in her 60s, with gray hair pulled back in a bun. She had on the same garb that Decker had seen her in before: black slacks, a white smock, and black rubber-soled shoes. Whether she was required to wear this or not, he wasn't sure.
They're not here,
she said in reply to Jameson's query about the Dabneys.
Do you know when they'll be back?
Asked Jameson.
Oh, in about a half hour. They're at the viewing service for Mr. Dabney. The funeral is tomorrow.
She shook her head sadly.
My God, what a damn shame. He was such a good man. Can't believe what happened.
And your name is? Asked Decker.
Cecilia. Cecilia Randall, but folks just call me Sissy.
Sissy, do you think we could wait for them? Asked Decker.
It's sort of important. She looked hesitant, but then opened the door farther, allowing them to pass.
I know you're with the FBI, so I guess it's okay. Can I get you a drink or anything?
Jameson began.
No, we...
Decker said, I'd like a cup of coffee if that's not too much trouble.
No trouble at all. They have a Keurig, just pop in a pod and there you go.
They followed her to the kitchen, where she pulled out a box of pods.
Full strength or decaf,
she said. Real coffee, just black. She busied herself with making the coffee while Decker watched.
This is a beautiful kitchen,
said Jameson.
Yes, it is,
Sissy said proudly.
Mrs. Dabney's renovated it twice since they lived here. She's got the eye for stuff like that. So you've worked for them a long time?
Said Jameson, glancing at Decker.
Over 35 years. I diapered all four of them girls, I can tell you that, all right here in this house. Wow,
said Jameson.
That's a long time. They're a wonderful family.
Decker said, So Mr. Dabney bought this place while he was still working at the NSA? Sissy took a cup out of the cabinet and put it under the Keurig's spout.
Don't know about that. He never talked about work, least with me.
It's just that I know this area is expensive. I just assumed he bought this place after he started his own company and started making the big bucks.
Again, I don't know nothing about that, but I do know Mrs. Dabney had some money.
Oh, she told you that?
Not in so many words, but you could tell she came from money. The way she dressed and walked and talked, Mr. Dabney wasn't always such a sharp dresser. And I remember he used to drive a really old car when they first got this place, but then he bought himself this yellow Porsche. Now that was a beautiful car. Porsche, nice,
said Jameson, throwing a glance at Decker.
So the Dabneys have had a nice life up until now,
she quickly added. The coffee cup filled, Sissy handed it to Decker before throwing the used pot away in a slide-out trash can.
Well, everybody's got problems, and Mrs. Dabney's no exception.
So you mean before now? Asked Decker.
I mean way back.
She hesitated, and then, in a lower voice, though no one was around, said,
She had two miscarriages and a stillborn baby. Little girl, it was awful.
Oh, my God.
Exclaimed Jameson.
Was that before she had her four daughters?
Stillborn was. That was before my time, but Mrs. Dabney talked to me about it once.
The two miscarriages were in between Ms. Amanda and Ms. Natalie.
Sissy wiped up around the Keurig machine with a cloth.
But they have problems, too.
I noted Amanda's arm and Natalie's toes, said Decker.
Right. Had those since birth. Plus, they all got the asthma pretty bad. But they're all smart, and Ms. Amanda, Ms. Natalie have kids.
And the other girls? Her voice dropped lower.
To tell the truth, I've heard Miss Jules and Miss Samantha got problems in that department. I mean, having babies. Might be why they're not married yet.
Jameson looked around.
Do you think Mrs. Dabney will stay here?
Don't know. Have to tell you, I'm worried about that. I've worked here a long time, and they've taken real good care of me. But if she moves in with one of her daughters, she won't need me.
Well, let's hope it doesn't come to that. She might want to stay.
Maybe.
Sissy said doubtfully.
Now, I've got work to do, so.
Decker and Jameson thanked her and retreated to the library to wait for the Dabneys to arrive home.
Wow. I had no idea the Dabneys had been through all that,
said Jameson.
Makes it even sadder.
Decker said nothing. He just sat there staring around the room. Then his eye caught on something. It was a black bag strap sticking out of the drawer of the desk that was situated against one wall of the room. He walked over, opened the drawer, and pulled out the bag.
What is that?
Asked Jameson. Decker unzipped the bag and pulled the device out. A really old video recorder. Uses VHS tapes.
Anything in it?
No, but there's a tape still in the wrapper. He felt around inside the bag and pulled out remnants of a wrapper from another tape. He looked down at the plastic with the 3M logo on it. Next, he opened up all the desk drawers and looked through them.
Anything?
Asked Jameson. Walter Dabney was a very tidy and organized man. Even the rubber bands are neatly arranged, pencils and pens divided. Not a stray scrap of paper. He looked around the library at the books. We searched this place before, and you know what we found?
What?
That all the books are alphabetized by the last name of the author.
Organized, like you said?
Decker held up the odd scraps of plastic. So why not throw this away? There's a wastebasket right next to the desk.
I don't know.
Decker held up the tape. And we've seen something shaped like this before.
We have? Where?
In the bag the woman was carrying when she and Dabney were leaving the bank after cleaning out his safe deposit box. You could see the rectangular outline through the bag.
Wait a minute. You think he used that camera to do a videotape? And that was what was in the safe deposit box?
Yeah, I do. And by that time, Dabney probably didn't care about being neat and tidy, so the plastic wrapper just got left there. It was right then that they heard a car drive up. Decker quickly put the camera bag back, looked out the window, and saw the five women get out of an SUV. A few moments later, they could hear them coming into the home. A minute later, Ellie Dabney came into the library.
I didn't expect you to be back,
she said, her expression weary. Jules appeared behind her.
What's going on, Mom?
Decker said, We just have a few more questions.
Have you found out anything?
Said Jules.
About Dad?
We're working on it, said Decker. Ellie sat down, and a moment later, Sissy came in carrying a cup of steaming tea. She handed it to Ellie, glanced surreptitiously at Decker, and then hurried out of the room. Jules sat down next to her mother. Ellie said absently,
What questions?
Decker sat down across from her. Your husband had done well for himself.
Yes, he had,
snapped Jules.
What of it?
Decker kept his focus on Ellie. He was at NSA when you got married?
That's right. He was there for about a decade right out of college. He started his business on our wedding anniversary.
She smiled weakly.
He said it was good karma. Good luck to take the plunge then. The kids were still young. In fact, Natalie was just a toddler.
Jules said,
What does any of this have to do with what happened?
Decker said, We're trying to establish certain things in connection with what happened. The first one being, is there a connection between your father and the victim?
I told you that I could think of none,
said Ellie. Decker eyed her closely. Has Natalie spoken to you?
About what?
Her husband's gambling debts.
No, I haven't.
This came from Natalie, who was standing in the doorway, her overcoat still on, and a glass of white wine in her hand. Ellie looked at her youngest daughter.
Gambling debts? Natalie, what is he talking about?
Natalie looked sourly at Decker, walked into the room, and flopped down into a chair. She took a swig of her wine and said,
Okay, why the hell not? I guess it's not enough that I had to go and look at my father's dead body today.
She sat up, drained her glass, and said,
Corbett had gambling debts. They were huge. The people he owed them to were really bad. They threatened to kill us, and they meant it. I called and asked Daddy for help.
She stopped there and looked away. A stunned Ellie glanced at Decker.
I don't understand.
Your husband found the money to pay off those debts by stealing classified government secrets and selling them. Ellie Dabney slowly rose on wobbly legs.
What?
Jules stood and supported her mother with an arm under her elbow.
What bullshit is this? Dad stealing secrets? That's crap.
How else was he going to get $10 million? Asked Decker. Jules paled and shot her sister a glance.
$10 million? Is this true?
Natalie looked dully at her older sister.
Why in the hell do you think I'm divorcing the prick? Because he's no longer good in bed?
You asked Dad to come up with $10 million?
Screamed Jules.
Who else was I supposed to ask?
Her sister screamed right back.
Don't you understand? They were going to kill Corbett, me, and Tasha, okay? My daughter was going to die. I had no choice.
The noise of the confrontation brought the two other sisters rushing into the room. Samantha exclaimed,
What the hell is going on? Your bitch of a little sister made our father commit treason to pay the gambling debts of her dickless husband. That's what.
Shouted Jules. The blood drained from Amanda's and Samantha's faces.
What?
Said Amanda in a quavering voice.
How could you, Nat?
Said Jules, tears now streaming down her cheeks.
I didn't know he was going to steal government secrets,
said Natalie in a hollow voice.
Look, I never thought.
That's right, you never thought,
accused Jules.
You never did think, except about yourself. And now we know why Dad killed himself. Because he was ashamed of what he did, of what you drove him to do.
During all this, Ellie had just stood there, staring at the floor. Decker was watching her. He said, Mrs. Dabney, can we talk privately? He eyed the sisters. I think this might be more productive without the histrionics.
Histrionics!
Exclaimed Jules.
You son of a bitch. What the hell gives you the right—
Ellie turned and slapped her daughter across the cheek.
Shut up.
Jules fell back, holding her cheek and looking stunned.
But Mom—
began Natalie.
All of you. Not another word,
said Ellie.
Leave. Just get out. Go somewhere. Get drunk. I don't care, but just leave this room. Now.
Looking hurt and offended, the sisters, shooting dark glances at Decker and Jameson, slowly filed out of the room. When the door closed behind them, Ellie sank into her chair. Decker waited a few more moments before saying, The question becomes, was this a one-off or not?
What does that even mean?
Said Ellie, not looking at him. Your husband was able to find a buyer for the secrets relatively fast. If he hadn't committed espionage before, reason would dictate that he wouldn't have been able to do that. But if he had sold secrets before, then he might have had a ready-made purchaser. You see the logic? She slowly nodded.
I see the logic, but I can't believe it applies in this case. My husband was a patriot. He would never betray his country.
But that's exactly what he did do, Decker pointed out.
Only to save his daughter,
she shot back.
That would be the only reason, his family.
It's still treason, and we have to find out if he had committed it before.
I can't believe that he did.
So you can't help us, said Decker.
I knew nothing of his business. I already told you that. If Walt were stealing secrets, I have to imagine that someone at work would have known about it. But they have checks and balances in place for just that reason. He told me that.
Decker shot Jameson a glance. We should have followed that up before. Decker and Jameson stood. She said,
We're sorry to be putting you through all of this. I didn't think this could possibly get worse.
She paused.
Only it just did.
They left her there, staring at nothing, which was maybe all that the woman had left. Chapter 43.
So we go back to Dabney and Associates?
Asked Jameson. They climbed into the car. When Decker looked back at the house, he saw Natalie at a window, staring out at them. If looks could kill, thought Decker. He nodded and said, Yes. They reached Dabney's office about 30 minutes later. The reception was not one they expected. The doors to Dabney and Associates were closed and chained shut. The interior of the offices was dark, and two guards in army uniforms stood out front. Decker and Jameson walked up to them. Decker held out his FBI creds. The two guards were not impressed.
Where are the people who work here?
Asked Jameson. Neither guard answered. We're investigating this case, said Decker, and we need to get inside this space.
That won't be happening, sir, said one of the guards.
His hand moved across the butt of his holstered M11 pistol.
This is a federal investigation,
pointed out Jameson.
The guard leveled his gaze on her. And I've got my orders. Until those orders change, no one goes in, period.
Jameson was about to say something else when Decker grabbed her arm. Let's go. We're wasting time here. They rode the elevator back down to the lobby and ran smack into Faye Thompson. She looked like she'd been crying. When she saw Decker, her features turned to a scowl.
You bastard. Excuse me?
Said Jameson defensively. Thompson got right in Decker's face.
We were fully cooperating with you, and then you pull this shit?
I didn't pull anything, Decker replied calmly. We just got kicked out, too.
Don't lie to me. This has FBI written all over it.
In case you hadn't noticed, the FBI doesn't wear army uniforms.
You people are all in this together.
That's not how—
Do you realize what you've done?
Snapped Thompson, drawing attention from other people passing by in the lobby.
You've ruined us. We're done. Shutting us down like this? We're guilty as charged without ever having due process.
She pushed a finger into Decker's chest.
You screwed us over, you prick.
Actually, he had nothing to do with it,
said a voice. They all turned to stare at Harper Brown. She was dressed in camis with a sidearm. She walked over to stand directly in front of Thompson.
It wasn't the FBI. It was the DIA. If you have a problem with anything, you can take it up with me.
You had no right to—
We had every right. This is a national security issue. If you want to continue to discuss it, we can do so at DIA HQ.
Just because one of our partners—
Brown broke in.
I won't tell you again, Miss Thompson. If you want to discuss this, it won't be here, in public. You know better than that.
Thompson gazed around at the passersby staring at her.
You're going to hear from our lawyer,
she barked.
Looking forward to it,
said Brown.
Hope you have a good one. You're going to need it.
Thompson seemed about to hurl another comment, but then she turned and stalked off. Brown turned to Decker and Jameson.
Well, that was pleasant.
Decker eyed her clothing. Why the military duds?
I'm officially wearing my army hat today.
So you shut them down?
Said Jameson.
We took all the computers, servers, and records. Our people are currently going through them.
She paused and added,
Not to worry. We'll share whatever we find with the Bureau.
So you decided on a full frontal attack on Dabney's business, said Decker.
Let's go up, shall we?
She led them onto an elevator car, and they rode back up to Dabney's floor. When they got off, she led them to the entrance, showed her creds to the guards, and they unchained the door and allowed them to pass. Once inside, Jameson said,
Nice to have the golden key to get in here. Those guys out there wouldn't budge.
Brown said,
Of course they wouldn't budge. They're army. They have orders. They follow them. There is no room for discussion.
She turned to Decker, who was looking around the dark offices.
So what do you think?
She asked. About what?
About what we're doing here.
If I had to guess, I'd say you were trying to flush out a spy by attacking. She nodded approvingly.
Very good, Decker.
I didn't say I agreed with the tactic, he added.
Well, maybe I don't either, but it's been done.
So it didn't originate with you, then?
I follow orders just like those men out there.
Dabney and Associates has a lot of employees.
And we're watching all of them, as well as scrubbing their personal financials.
You really think Dabney was working with someone here to get the money to pay off the gambling debts?
I can't discount the possibility.
Jameson thought it was unlikely that Dabney, if he was always on the legal side, was able to find a buyer for the secrets so fast. Brown looked at Jameson.
I'm impressed. Thanks,
said Jameson curtly, though she looked pleased by the other woman's comment. Brown perched on the receptionist's desk.
You're exactly right. It's not that easy to find a buyer from scratch. It's not like you can locate them online or walk down a dark alley and bump into someone engaged in espionage who can find $10 million to hand over. More likely than not, you'll run right into an undercover operation designed to catch people trying to do just that.
So that either means Dabney was not as clean as everyone thought, or someone he worked with was dirty.
The issue is even more complicated than that, Decker. The thing is, it could have been a co-worker who helped Dabney with the sale, sure. Or it could have been someone else. Such as?
Said Jameson. Decker answered, Such as someone on the other side of the equation. He pointed at Brown. Someone from your side that Dabney was working with. Brown crossed her arms and nodded, her features turning grave.
The more I think about it, we might have a spy in the ranks of the DIA. I'm not just talking about decades ago, I mean currently.
Wouldn't be the first time, said Decker, as you pointed out to me previously. Jameson said,
We thought it might be Dabney who was the spy all these years, from his career at NSA onward. But he had to get the secrets from inside the government once he went to the private sector.
Pointed out Brown.
And there was the old security badge we found in Berkshire's locker. That was from the DIA, and it's very troubling that she had it in her possession.
Jameson said,
But regardless of whether Dabney was in the private sector, he could have gotten those secrets legitimately through his work. The persons he dealt with in the government might not know what he was doing with the information. That's true,
said Brown.
And I hope that turns out to be the case, but we can't take it as gospel that that is indeed the case.
So you're investigating your own agency, too, said Decker.
We have to.
You mentioned the security badge. Did you find out something about it?
It was used at DIA back in the late 80s and early 90s.
No idea who it was issued to? Asked Decker.
None. Back then it was just laminated plastic with no electronic guts.
Visitor or permanent? Asked Decker.
I wish I could tell you. Does that mean you don't know or you can't tell us?
Retorted Jameson.
I wish I could tell you.
Repeated Brown. Jameson looked like she was going to hit her.
Well, you know what they say. Be careful what you wish for.
Then she turned and walked out of the office.
She seems to have an attitude problem.
Noted Brown. No, she just doesn't like bullshit. We're on the same page with that.
Decker, I'm telling you, as much as I can, do you know what it costs me to even have you come to DIA and look at those files?
Do you think Ann Berkshire was working with a mole in DIA way back, too?
It's possible. In fact, with that badge, it's probable that she was.
But that mole was not Dabney?
He was at NSA for part of that time, but then on his own. He did work as a contractor for DIA beginning later in the 90s, so it wasn't his security badge. We can't show that they ever met except for the encounter outside the Hoover building. And if they had been working together for decades, we would have been able to find something, Decker.
So someone else then?
And we're at square one on that.
But you're obviously hoping to pop something by doing a deep dive on the folks here.
It's a long shot, but when you don't have better options, you have to go with something.
She paused.
So do you have any leads?
Yeah.
What are they?
I wish I could tell you. Decker turned and left the room. Chapter 44.
Why are we here, Decker?
Jameson was staring down at him as he perched on a couch in Ann Berkshire's million-dollar condo and gazed around. Decker didn't answer right away. I don't like incongruity, he said a few moments later.
Such as?
Such as why buy a condo like this and buy a top-of-the-line Benz if you don't decorate it with your stuff, in the case of the condo, or don't really drive it around, in the case of the Mercedes.
So she was eccentric, so what?
Decker shook his head and stood. It goes beyond mere eccentricity. She also has a run-down farmhouse and a crappy car that she drives to work, and on her rounds as the proverbial Good Samaritan.
What does that tell you?
If you were a spy and had made money, you might buy this condo and that car, but you would enjoy them. Not just have them, because you would have earned it. Now, if you just have them but don't enjoy them, there must be a reason. So in Berkshire's case, what is that reason? Jameson thought about this.
I don't know. We speculated she might have felt guilty.
If she was still spying, she obviously was not feeling guilty.
But there's no evidence that she was still spying. She was a substitute school teacher. And look at the stuff in the storage unit. It's old, floppy disk and an outdated security badge.
But at her farmhouse, we found a flash drive. That's not old 1980s technology. And added to that, someone nearly killed me to get it. And why have the old farmhouse with a flash drive hidden in the toilet paper holder if you've long since retired from espionage? Jameson opened her mouth to say something, but then closed it.
Good point,
she finally managed to say.
But if that's the case, then she must have been working with Dabney. I mean, otherwise it's quite a coincidence that he commits espionage and ends up gunning down someone who's also a spy.
Maybe, said Decker doubtfully.
Decker, it has to be. You don't believe in coincidences, not even small ones. You always say that. So if Berkshire was spying, it had to have been along with Walter Dabney. That would explain why he could find a buyer so fast for the secrets. Berkshire probably arranged it.
And who tried to kill me at the farmhouse and stole the flash drive? And what was on it?
More secrets. Berkshire probably wasn't working alone. She gets killed, and her associate goes there to get whatever materials she kept there. You saved them the trouble. They attacked you and found it. That all holds together.
Jameson said, a note of triumph in her voice. Decker went over to stare out the window.
You forgot to congratulate me on my brilliant theory?
Said Jameson. When Decker said nothing, she walked over to him.
You don't think I'm right?
Let's put it this way, Alex. I don't know that you're wrong.
Well, that's something. Do you have an alternative theory?
Not right now, no. Jameson looked around the space.
What happens to this place and all our money? They haven't found any family to leave it to.
Haven't given that any thought.
How did you leave it with Agent Brown?
Vague, said Decker.
You mean like you're being with me right now?
Let's go.
Where to?
To where it all started. Decker and Jameson walked the route that Decker had when he'd been unwittingly following Walter Dabney to the man's doom. They passed the guard shack, and Decker circled back. The guard inside was the same man who'd been on duty that morning. He recognized Decker and stepped out of the shack. "Hell of a thing that morning," he said. "Hell of a thing. Glad you were there to back me up." "No problem. It's my job." "I'm sure you've already been asked this," began Decker. "But had you seen Dabney before?" The guard nodded. "A few times. I think the last time was a couple months before. They told me he was going to a meeting that day. And Ann Berkshire? The man shook his head. No, don't remember her. But man, lots of people pass along here during the course of a day. Faces get jumbled after a while. I hear you, said Decker. Do you remember seeing a clown that day? The person would have been up the street from you, closer to the cafe where Dabney was waiting. Give me a sec. A truck with GSA painted on the sides had turned toward the underground garage entrance, and the guard walked over to speak to the driver. As Decker watched, the driver showed his ID and paperwork, and then the guard pulled his walkie-talkie and spoke into it. Another guard came out a few seconds later with a bomb-sniffing dog. Another guard followed with a device that had a mirror used to look under vehicles. The two guards and the dog performed their tasks as the guard Decker had been talking to rejoined him. The man nodded. Yeah, I did see the clown. I was thinking it was a little early for Halloween. You didn't happen to see where the clown went? No, I keep my eyes roaming around, mostly looking for folks paying the Hoover Building too much attention.
Is that a problem?
Asked Jameson. You get crazies for sure. Most are harmless, but it only takes one, and we've had problems. Decker looked around. Do you have exterior surveillance cameras? The guard stepped closer and his voice dropped. Dirty little secret is we used to. I mean, the cameras are still there, invisible, but most aren't operational. One reason we're moving out of this space. Place is falling apart. Right, said Decker. Well, thanks. They continued on and reached the spot where Dabney had shot Berkshire. Decker stopped and looked down at the pavement.
Are you seeing blue?
Asked Jameson. He nodded absently, lifted his gaze, and looked around. If Dabney and Berkshire were working together, why would they meet down here? Dabney had a meeting scheduled with the Bureau, and you wouldn't think he'd want his partner in espionage within 100 miles of the place. This comment took Jameson aback as they started walking along.
Okay, I do not have an answer for that,
she said. And it didn't seem to me that Dabney and Berkshire even knew each other. Forget the point that Dabney apparently needed the clown to signal him that Berkshire was coming. That doesn't necessarily mean that Dabney didn't know what Berkshire looked like. He might have been shown a picture of her, though none was found on his person.
He might have been given a picture and just memorized her features.
Right. The clown thing was just about timing, allowing Dabney to intercept Berkshire. But when I saw them together that morning, it did not seem to me that they knew each other.
And then he shot her.
And then he shot her, replied Decker.
It seems like we take a step forward on this case, and then we take 2 steps back.
Sometimes it seems that way on every case, said Decker.
But we are going to solve this sucker, right?
Decker didn't answer. Chapter 45. Melvin Mars was waiting out front for them when they got back to their apartment that night.
Why didn't you just go up, Melvin?
Asked Jameson.
You have a key and the passcode.
It's your place, not mine, said Mars, smiling. I'm not looking to intrude on your space.
We haven't had dinner yet. We could go out.
That sounds great. They all turned to see Harper Brown striding over from her car.
I've been waiting for you to get back, too,
said Brown. She looked up at Mars.
I didn't know you were doing the same. Melvin Mars, this is Agent Harper Brown with the DIA.
Brown looked intrigued.
Melvin Mars, the former football player.
Mars smiled. That's not how most people would describe me. Usually it starts with, you mean Mars, Melvin, that dude on Texas's death row?
And Decker got you off,
noted Brown. We all got him off, said Decker, including Melvin. He was there at the very end when we nearly got blown up, and he's already saved my butt up here.
Impressive,
said Brown.
I also read that you got a very sweet payoff from the government. No more than he deserved,
said Jameson.
In fact, money doesn't come close to compensating him for 20 years of his life. I'm not arguing with that. So let's go to dinner, and I can get to know your friend better.
Why? Asked Decker.
In my off hours, I'm actually a very social person, Decker,
said Brown. They were seated at a table in the middle of a Vietnamese restaurant in D.C. Brown had suggested it. Decker looked at the menu and said, "I don't recognize one thing on here."
"I can order for you, Decker,"
said Brown. Decker dropped his menu. "Sounds good to me. Do they have fries?" Mars handed her his menu. "I'm in the same boat as Decker, so you can order for me, too." Brown looked at Jameson.
"You good, or you want me to do the honors for you, too?"
"I love Vietnamese food,"
replied Jameson in an irritated voice. When the waitress came, Brown ordered for the three of them in Vietnamese.
"Impressive," said Mars as the waitress walked off. "I can barely make my way around English."
"Come on, Melvin, you graduated from UT early with a business degree,"
pointed out Jameson.
"Prison doesn't improve one's brain power, at least not mine, not after 20 years.
"Did you find anything in the files at Dabney's office?" Decker asked Brown. She shot Mars a glance.
"I doubt he's cleared to hear this."
"Neither are we," pointed out Decker. "You can trust Melvin," he added.
"Okay. No, we found nothing in the files, but we're still looking. We were hoping for a smoking gun, but didn't find one. How about you?"
"We haven't found a gun, much less a smoking one, but we have questions, like if Dabney was working with Berkshire, why meet near the Hoover building? He already had a meeting scheduled that morning, and if she was a spy, I doubt she would be attending."
"That's true."
"And as Jameson pointed out, if they weren't working together, it's a hell of a coincidence to have one spy kill another unrelated spy." Brown glanced at Jameson.
"Another good observation, Jameson. You're showing a real talent for this area."
Jameson didn't respond to this remark. Decker added, "And if Berkshire wasn't spying anymore, she had a weird retirement. $1 million condo and 6-figure ride paired with a crappy farmhouse and an old dented Honda."
"I don't disagree,"
said Brown.
"It's all weird."
"And we still haven't accounted for the person who nearly killed me and stole the flash drive. Berkshire was dead, and Dabney was on his deathbed at the time, so there's a third party out there."
"Who wanted that flash drive?"
observed Brown. "And I wonder what was on there," said Decker.
"What else? More stolen secrets,"
replied Brown. "You think?" he said.
"What else could it be?"
"If I knew the answer to that, I wouldn't be asking the question. But if Dabney and Berkshire were working together, we should be able to find some connection."
"All I can tell you, Decker, is that the first inkling we had that Dabney had gone bad was recently. He's worked on other DIA projects before, and we had no problems. And he also had no incentives to steal. The guy was in great shape financially. It was only this gambling debt problem that pushed him over the edge."
She glanced at Mars.
"You carry this to your grave, okay?"
He put up his hands in mock surrender, smiled, and said,
"Hey, I'm on your side, okay? I'm gonna forget everything you guys say tonight."
Brown smiled and said,
"I knew I liked you."
She turned back to Decker.
"And Dabney had to routinely take polygraphs to keep his security clearance status up to date. He never failed one."
"So you're convinced that this was just a one-off?"
"Unless you can show me something to the contrary,"
Jameson interjected.
"But he was able to sell the secrets very quickly." "I know. You said that before, and it's a valid point, but it's a leap of logic to go from that to the conclusion that the guy's been stealing secrets for a long time. Well, we'll see if we can get your logic to match up with ours at some point,"
said Jameson tersely. The two women did a bit of a stare down. Fortunately, their food came right then, and they started eating. Brown eyed Mars.
"So how do you spend your time now?"
"Doing a little coaching at the high school level, basically trying to figure the rest of my life out."
"You two have something in common," said Decker.
"What's that?" asked Mars.
"You're both rich."
When Mars eyed Brown, she said,
"Nothing to do with me. I inherited just luck of birth."
"Yeah, that's just great,"
Jameson muttered under her breath.
"I don't think of myself as rich," said Mars. "Maybe I would if I had earned the money.